Hearty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
The IAAF World Athletics Championships in London certainly produced plenty of talking points, and watching the action in his hometown was our very own, the energetic Andy Edwards. Andy, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much, Sonny. It's great to be on the sunny side of sports. Usually, you know, when I'm on your program, it's because I'm in some far off and distant place, which is always slightly energetic. But this time, I didn't have very far to travel. In fact, you remember when you actually came to my house and we did an interview, the Olympics in 2012, from my place to the Olympic Stadium in London. Yeah, she just walked under 10 minutes, and then you get a relatively short train journey, about 20 minutes. So it's very odd going to the Olympic Stadium, really, because I'm always used to being in some foreign hotel, getting downstairs, looking for a taxi or the media bus to take you to a stadium, or, as you know, the various marathons and road races that I cover, and being somewhere not where I usually go shopping.
Well, Andy, let's start our London 2017 review with a farewell. The last championship appearance for Usain Bolt.
I'm Lightning Bolt. I'm not flash guarding anybody. My name is Lightning Bolt.
Lightning didn't quite strike as usual, did it, Andy?
Well, there were lots of fantastic happenings in this London World Athletics Championships. The farewell of Bolt, well, it's just what, in a way, of course, he wouldn't have wished it like this, but what a story, what an extraordinary story. I think it's fair to say, I mean, you see him get the bronze in the 100 metres and he decided not to run the 200 anyway. This may have been, as I heard one of our host broadcasters, Steve Cram, the great 1500 metre runner who's working for British TV now, saying maybe it was one season too many for the Lightning Bolt. And I think that's fair comment. He's raced sparingly. I was watching a TV documentary, which was fascinating, before the championships, about Bolt, following him through not only this year but in recent years. And it brings home to you how he has had to cope with injuries, as indeed just about every elite athlete has. And it's further praise for him, the way he's come back. And as a youngster, as a teenager, he had some back problems. I remember him when he won a world youth or junior title, and then he, in a sense, disappeared for a couple of years, and he was struggling with major lower back issues. He came back from that. He's got a great coach in Glenn Mills, but he just didn't look quite as sharp as we've been used to seeing. Well, from the Beijing Olympics 2008, I really think he's been the greatest sprinter of all time, even ahead of the Americans Jesse Owens in 1936 with those four Olympic golds in Berlin, and indeed Carl Lewis with his four Olympic golds, even though they also did the long jump. Usain Bolt has been something without peer. And then we come to the relay, the 4x100. And everybody's hoping for some great farewell on Saturday night. You know, Bolt down the home straight, leading Jamaica to the gold that he's done for a good half dozen years previously. But it wasn't to be. There was some talk afterwards. I think some of the team said, well, we were kept in the holding area in the stadium, down in the bowels, the depths of the stadium, too long. For 45 minutes, it was cold there. That contributed to his hamstring injury or whatever leg injury it was. But I think it was Father Time, actually. Fantastic performer, fantastic all round for the sport in what are not easy days for the sport. It's going to be fascinating what he does next. I don't know whether you've got any ideas, Sonny, about what Usain Bolt's going to do next. But you see from your perspective in your programme on elite performers in every kind of sport, and it can be tough when you step away from the spotlight.
Well, Andy, I know Bolt has made no secret that maybe an action movie role down the road.
I'd definitely be a great action star. I see myself, you know what I mean, like Jason Bourne.
Well, he certainly has immense charisma, and it does seem natural. You know, the way he's been, well, not fooling around, but relaxed and joking when he goes to, waiting to go to the blocks in a race. I mean, very few people can do that. Yeah, you can do that, horse around and come last, but when you break boundaries in athletics, in sprinting, as he's done. I mean, don't forget, he broke Michael Johnson's 200-meter world record, you know. And Michael Johnson, of course, then lost last year in the Olympics to the South African Wade van Niekerk, his 400-meter world record. But, you know, Johnson's records were fabulous. And Bolt could do that and maybe clown isn't the right word, but just be himself. Now, of course, can he act outside of that parameter? Who knows? I'm sure there'll be a lot of checkbooks and money offers. It will be interesting because I don't see him necessarily as a coach. A performer, yes. He's joked about football nets because we all know he's a Manchester United fan. So, you know, maybe he's going to be in a VIP seating at Man United games. But so it will be a case of him facing some choices.
Andy, the men's 100 meters in London had some controversy with Justin Gatlin of the USA winning the gold. Last year at the Olympics, some commentators said Usain Bolt saved the sport by beating Gatlin, who was banned for drugs. What do you make of the current situation?
Well, I think firstly, we have to put Justin Gatlin's situation in the context of these are difficult times for world athletics. We've got Russia as a nation banned, still under suspension by the IAAF. Investigation still ongoing, not only in Russia, but also in the USA. The US Drug Enforcement Agency is still carrying out an investigation into the American coach Alberto Salazar, who guides Mo Farah, among other athletes. So a lot has come out. Justin Gatlin, yes, if you look at the official statistics, he tested twice for performance-enhancing drugs, was banned, and then came back to the sport. I think there is, looking at the first test, it was a case of, I won't say it wasn't a positive test, but it maybe not as serious as the second one. There are others who've come back and competed again because of Gatlin's profile, because last year he was in a race against Usain Bolt. That brought everything to a head. And in fact, the quote you say about he saved the sport was from Steve Cram, who is a tremendous athletics commentator on British TV and a former world champion in the 1500 metres. So, you know, he's someone who speaks from the heart of the sport, but Cram is also a very acute observer. He's not a flag waver as a commentator, and that was his view. Personally, maybe I felt that was a bit extreme. And I did notice, it was quite apparent, the crowd, the fans in London's Olympic Stadium did at times boo Justin Gatlin. I mean, they booed when he won, sometimes around the podium area, and also he was in the US team for the 4x100, the relay. Well, there are others you could boo. But I understand that reaction. And again, if you look on the wide spectrum, you know, performance-enhancing means, drugs, are something which probably concern every major sport and perhaps some minor ones as well.
Andy, the World Championships weren't short of controversy elsewhere. The situation of Caster Semenya of South Africa has again brought the question of gender in women's events to the fore. Your thoughts?
Well, this is an immensely sensitive issue. I think everybody's agreed on that for everybody concerned. Those who, like Caster Semenya, are, and again, I'm struggling to find the right words. I don't want to use the word accused, but are the center of this controversy. At the same time, there are women running at elite level. And if I take the example of a British runner, Lindsay Sharp, in the Olympic 800 meter final last year in Rio, afterwards seeing her on give interviews in the Mix Zone, she was distraught. And she was, if I summarise what she was saying, she felt the races weren't fair because she felt she and others were competing against some other athletes, women athletes, who had a higher than average testosterone level. And in fact, it, in her view, I make a sort of summary, not exact words, but kind of, you know, it's not just women in these races. Now, what is happening is the Court of Arbitration for Sport, CAS, is currently reviewing new evidence from the IAAF, the world governing body for athletics, concerning what advantages can be gained by women with a naturally, and I stress that word, naturally high testosterone level. So we await the outcome of that survey. And of course, one's immensely sympathetic to any woman who feels that, well, she's been targeted, or is, perhaps a better expression is, the subject of this discussion. What is without doubt is that Semenya was supreme in the 800 metres in London's World Championships, as she's been for the past 2 years. I mean, it's September 2015, almost 2 years, or just about 2 years, since she last lost an 800-metre track race. And before that, in London, she got a bronze in the 1500. So she's a great runner. But has others have said, for example, Dr. Joanne Harper, who's transgender herself, supports the IAAF position in that this aspect of naturally high testosterone levels needs to be looked at and something needs to be done. And as I say, Dr. Harper is transgender herself, and she's talked about the case of the Indian sprinter, Duti Chand, who was withdrawn from their national team before the 2014 Commonwealth Games. So it's immensely sensitive, and I mean, I don't envy anybody who's trying to find a solution, but clearly this question will not go away.
When we talk of farewells, Andy, it wasn't just Usain Bolt, but also Mo Farah. How does he rank among the greats of long-distance running?
Well, I think in this modern age with TV, video, all the kind of media, social media, sometimes people can look back 5 years, 10 years, and really when we're talking about all-time greats or who is the greatest, you really have to go back now. It's coming up to about 100 years. So certainly, Mo Farah, his achievements, well, he won the 10,000 metres in London. That was a bruising race. He had to show that he was tough in terms of making sure he had a clear run, and then didn't quite have enough in the 5,000, beaten. He had to settle for silver behind Ethiopia's Mukhtar Edris. Now, Farah, day in, day out, would reckon he would beat Edris, but this was not to be. I think a bit like Usain Bolt, maybe Mo Farah, this was and is his last track season before he concentrates completely on the marathon. It showed. I mean, still a wonderful performer, but it showed. When I think back, as you know, Sonny, I live in North London. It's close to Hampstead Heath, where there are lots of cross-country races. And I remember years ago seeing the young, and he must have been a schoolboy, Mo Farah, run in a cross-country race on the Heath. And it's a very hilly course, and sometimes if you're new to the course, you might go the wrong way. And he was in the lead, and he went the wrong way. And the officials were waving him back to come back. And, of course, he won. Now, I didn't. No, I was looking at one of the all-time greats when I saw him as a schoolboy. And in 2009, when he was in the final of the 10,000 metres in Berlin, he did well, but he wasn't among the medals. And I thought that was a tremendous performance. What he's done since from, shall we say, 2011 onwards, he got a gold and silver, the world champs. Then in London 2012, he got that Olympic double, 5 and 10,000 metres. And that set everything off on fantastic performances, 10 gold medals included. I thought, where's this come from? Now, Mo Farah and his coach Alberto Salazar would say the move to the USA, he got all the details of training, preparation right, and he learnt from, before he moved, from staying in a house with Kenyan runners, high-quality Kenyan runners in southwest London, in Teddington, living and training with them, he learnt about discipline and rest and how hard training had to be. He's achieved greatness alongside Lasse Virren, who won a double, Olympic double, 5 and 10 from Finland in 1972, and then 76 again, and another great Finn in the 1920s, Paavo Nurmi. Then you come to more modern day, Haile Gebrselassie.
Hello, this is Haile Gebrselassie. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sport on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
His success on the track, beating Paul Tergat, and then, of course, Kenenisa Bekele. And both Haile and Kenenisa have since switched to the marathon. Haile broke the world marathon record. Kenenisa, if he stays injury-free, looks as if he could. I think, to really sum it up, Mo Farah isn't quite, I would say, yet at the level of Haile Gebrselassie and Kenenisa Bekele, especially Haile, because they both have moved to the marathon. Haile broke the world record, although he never ran a championship marathon. So that's one, if you put it in inverted commas, strike against Haile, nor has Kenenisa. Kenenisa may still have time to run a championship marathon. So we'll see what Mo Farah has done, or will do rather, in the marathon. He ran 2 hours, 8 minutes on his debut in London in 2014. That was good, not as good as some people expected. But both Haile Kenenisa and Paul Tergat of Kenya have said most people, even people as good as they are, have to serve a marathon apprenticeship. It may be Mo Farah has to serve that apprenticeship. And I think, just on a kind of news content, when we're talking about surveys and research, the ongoing investigation into the coaching of Alberto Salazar, and if he has crossed any line in terms of performance enhancing, given that Mo Farah is still theoretically one of his athletes. They seem to be more distant these days, but it does seem that Salazar is still passing on advice to Mo Farah. Then that is a question still to be resolved. And indeed, Mo Farah, the day after the 5,000 metres in London, gave a press conference, and he accused some sections of the UK press of conducting a witch hunt against him.
It's like, I achieve what I have achieved, and then you're trying to destroy it.
I wouldn't agree with that. I don't consider it a witch hunt. You know, if you're a journalist, sometimes you have to ask hard questions. And Farah said, you've got to realise how hard I work. I think everybody would appreciate how hard he must work, but that doesn't answer the question. So it's another one of those questions in world athletics at present, which is not going to go away any day soon.
Thanks, Andy. That's the energetic Andy Edwards in London. And we'll hear more of Andy's analysis and commentary on the recent World Athletics Championships in the British capital later this week. Ivory Coast won 2 silver medals at the World Championships. Both medals came from sprinter Marie-Josée Talou, who finished runner-up in the women's 100 meters and 200 meters finals. Talou is the subject of my latest Sunny Side of Sports blog post. Check it out at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. Once again, that address, blogs.voanews.com/sunny. I encourage our VOA listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. Joining us now is Andrew Palcheski, the VOA's social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Good to be with you.
Welcome back, Andrew. What's trending on this Tuesday?
Well, someone that we've been talking about for the past weeks and months, Tiger Woods, back trending again because of a toxicology report from that incident where he was arrested in May for reckless driving and driving under the influence. That toxicology report released today showing that Woods had 5 different drugs in his system during that arrest. Everything from different kinds of prescription pills, anxiety medication, painkillers. People are reacting to this in amazement that he was able to even drive with that many different substances in his system. And a lot of people saying that it's amazing that no one was hurt or worse as a result of this incident. Mm. You know, anytime we talk about Tiger Woods, he's one of these huge names in sports. He always becomes a trending topic when he pops up in the news. But a lot of people taking issue with that even. They're saying, leave Tiger alone. Let him recover. He's trying to get better. He's trying to be on the path to wellness and getting back onto the golf course. So don't keep dredging this up every time it comes up. But because he is a public figure, it is getting a lot of attention and a lot of reaction on social media.
Any reaction from Tiger?
I haven't seen any yet. I think he's trying to lay low. He's focusing on himself, as we've talked about with athletes like LeBron shutting off their social media during playoffs and things. I imagine that Tiger would do something similar, kind of shut off social media, keep away from that while he's trying to get better.
What else is trending, Andrew?
Well, speaking of somebody who got better, Chad Bettis, he's a pitcher for Major League Baseball's Colorado Rockies. And back in December, he was diagnosed with testicular cancer. He underwent chemotherapy and treatment for that and was able to beat that cancer. And last night, Bettis returned to baseball, his first appearance since being diagnosed and beating that cancer, getting a standing ovation there at Coors Field in Denver, Colorado. The fans very happy to see him back. And I think he was very happy to be back in baseball. He pitched 7 innings out of 9 innings they played, gave up no runs and only 6 hits. So that would be an impressive start for any pitcher, let alone one that's just come back after being out of the game for the past 8 months and somebody who's been battling cancer for the past 8 months. Mm. So really impressive stuff. The Colorado Rockies celebrating Bettis being back. And I love this tweet that they sent out, the Colorado Rockies. They said, the only score that matters tonight, Chad Bettis 1, cancer 0.
Nice.
So I thought that was such a great sentiment that they sent out. And we saw this across not just Major League Baseball, but sports. Even athletes from other teams and other sports wishing Bettis the best and sharing how they've are inspired by this comeback. Among them, the New York Yankees of Major League Baseball, one of the biggest teams in the country, known the world over. They said, good luck to our friends, the Rockies, and see Bettis 35. That's his Twitter handle. In his return, and they do hashtag together for Bettis. So that's a hashtag a lot of people have been using over the past months as he's been recovering. And even outside of sports, we saw some great reaction. Actor Ben Stiller, big sports fan. He's someone who's been involved with raising money for cancer research and treatment. He tweeted out, he said, congrats to Chad Bettis on such an inspiring comeback. Any cancer survivor is a warrior. Hashtag respect. So regardless of whether you're a sports fan or not, whether you're a fan of the Colorado Rockies or not, you're seeing a lot of people hearing about the story, reacting to the story, and sending really positive vibes to Chad Bettis. It's pretty amazing that he was able to not just beat this disease, but come back and be back in the game that he loves so much. Really inspiring.
Inspirational comeback story right there, Andrew. What else is trending?
Well, finally, two big names in the tennis world, one on the men's side, one on the women's side, both trending today. And we'll start with the men, Rafael Nadal. Rafael Nadal is playing at the Cincinnati Open right now and pretty much alone at the top there. Roger Federer has pulled out with a back injury. Andy Murray has pulled out with injury. And because those two men have pulled out, Rafael Nadal this Monday will return to number one in the world. 1,143 days after he was last number one, that was on July 6th, 2014, over 3 years later, he is back on top. So it's very exciting for Nadal fans. Murray fans a little disappointed, I think, that he's going to lose that number one spot because he won't be able to defend his points there in Cincinnati. But Nadal said, a lot of things happened since the last time I was number one, but I maintain the passion for the game, and here I am. So great news for him. And great news for fans of Maria Sharapova. It's just been announced that she will receive a wild card into the main draw for the U.S. Open. It's the first Grand Slam tournament that she'll be in after her 15-month suspension for that doping violation. So her fans are very happy to see her back. She won't have to go through the qualifying to get to the U.S. Open. She'll be right there in the main draw. So it's going to be very interesting to see how she does, if she can capitalize on that now that Serena Williams is out expecting her first child, or if she'll run into maybe some of these other veterans that have come back, like Victoria Azarenka and Petra Kvitova. Not to even say anything about the young guns that are out there, but lots of trending tennis news today.
Andrew Palcheski, the VOA social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks very much, Sonny.
And that wraps up the August 15th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Double billing here in Studio 22. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Bill Barber, double billing with the Bills. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The campaign against ISIS has dramatically accelerated over the past 6 months. Since 2014, when ISIS was at the height of its power, the group has lost about 78% of the territory it used to hold in Iraq and about 58% of the territory it used to hold in Syria. They can no longer operate there. Nearly 30% of all the territory that has been retaken from ISIS, about 20,000 square kilometers, has actually happened in the last 6 months, said Special Presidential Envoy for the Global Coalition to Counter ISIS, Brett McGurk, at a recent press conference. Importantly, of all that territory that they have lost, they have not regained.
They have never been able to retake any of this ground, and we're going to make sure that that continues. Importantly, not just territory, but even more important, people. Almost 5 million people who had been living under ISIS are no longer living under ISIS. They have been liberated by coalition-enabled operations on the ground.
This change is due to four key changes that were put in place very early in the administration of President Donald Trump, said Special Envoy McGurk. First, the White House delegated tactical authority from Washington down through the chain of command to our commanders on the ground. That has made a tremendous difference in our ability to seize opportunities from ISIS. Second, we now conduct a campaign of annihilation. Prior to a military operation, we surround the enemy so that foreign fighters in particular cannot escape. Every foreign fighter that made its way into Syria and Iraq, we want to make sure that they can never make their way out of Syria and Iraq, said Mr. McGurk. Third, we look for ways to increase our burden sharing from the coalition. In other words, every member contributes. And finally, we engage every part of our government in the process to attack the enemy on every front, said Mr. McGurk. We're taking advantage of opportunities, working not just in Iraq and Syria, but also to sever the financial connections and propaganda networks that continue to fuel terrorist groups like this.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I'm Linor Moudou. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, troubling times in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The United States says it's concerned at the inability of both the DRC government and an opposition coalition to implement a political transition agreement reached last December, a DRC political discussion.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is James Bratty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.